is Alexia Gordon, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries from Henry Press and host of the Cozy Corner podcast, part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Joining me in the Cozy Corner today is Allison von Rosenvinger, who as D.A. Bartley writes the Abish Taylor Mysteries for Crooked Lane. Allison also blogs with me on the Misdemeanors blog. Welcome, Allison.
Thank you so much for having me, Alexia. This is a blast.
So please tell us about your first Abish Taylor mystery, Blessed Be the Wicked.
Ah, yes. That is a strange story because I realized that when I look back on writing that, I've always loved mysteries, always. Like from the time my very first memories of reading a grown-up book was Agatha Christie, this was always my go-to, but I don't think in a million years I would have ever thought I was capable of writing a mystery. They were just what I devoured, and that was what I did. And then there was if I look back on it, a kind of a hard time in my life where my mother, who was dying of Alzheimer's, and I was traveling back and forth to Utah all the time. And somehow, out of all of these visits, I went and visited. I was back in the state all the time, and I visited this enormous house near where a friend of mine lived because I just needed a break from all of the caregiving. And you, as a physician, I'm sure you deal with this on a daily basis. Those of us who are, you know, mere lay people don't. And I just needed a break, and I went to visit this friend with this enormous empty house, and I guess it stuck in my head. And I came back to New York after a long visit in Utah. And I had this idea of what could happen in an empty house. And I just started writing. And I had no idea where the writing would go. And as I said, this is sort of this series of unfortunate events, is what I sometimes call it, this difficult period. I came back from having seen and cared for my mom, and my daughter ended up with a moderate concussion in a lacrosse game and couldn't listen, couldn't watch anything, couldn't read anything. And she said, "Mom, what are you writing?" And I read to her everything that I had written, which was 7 chapters of what eventually became Blessed Be the Wicked. And then she said, "Well, what happens next?" And I said, "I don't know." And she said, "Well, go write some more." And so for a period of 2 weeks until she could go back to school, we kind of had this routine during the day that I was, you know, making her food and bringing her what she needed. And then I would go write, and then I would read. And by the time she was ready to go back to school, I'd written like 40, 50,000 words. And I'm one of those people who tries to finish what they start. So I did. And then I learned all of the stuff I don't know, which was the first 4 chapters need to be chopped. And actually, what did you think you were doing with this point of view and all the rest of it? But I had something there, and I worked from there. So, and then we had Blessed Be the Wicked.
So how did your final product change from your original conception?
Now that was an interesting development, evolution, really. I think I had really thought I was just going to be writing a classic murder mystery that happened in the state of Utah. It just happened to take place in a place that I know well. And when I finally got to chapter 5, which now is chapter 1, the scene that is chapter 1 is Blood Atonement scene. So it's a darker part of Mormon history. It didn't really happen in this way, but I wrote this Blood Atonement scene where you have this man whose throat's been slit. I'm not really spoiling anything because it's on the first page of the first book. And I realized I wasn't just writing about a regular mystery, a classic mystery that just happened to take place in the state of Utah. I was writing something that had to do with Mormon history. And in this particular case with Blood Atonement, what happens in a society that sort of brushes under the rug, I guess, for lack of a better way of describing it, sort of violent aspects of its own past. And I played around with that, and I realized that, yeah, when we ignore these sort of darker bits of our own history, don't bring them to light, don't process them, don't deal with them, that you can have people on the fringes that may go and take things a little bit too literally, which is kind of what happened in Blessed Be the Wicked.
So you took a very specific instance, an empty house, and you took very broad themes of community values and faith and obedience and incorporated that into a compelling murder mystery. Do you think that crime fiction can be entertaining as well as instructive, as well as providing social commentary?
Oh, I hope so. I think it can, and I think it does, and I think there are so many great people out there who are doing exactly that thing. I mean, I look at Kelly Garrett, I look at Richie Narvaez, I look at people who are in really wonderful and fun ways that I want to read on the beach or at the poolside, weaving a fun, entertaining puzzle, because I really think at their hearts, I think mysteries are about the puzzling aspect, weaving that into a social background and asking questions about who we are as a community and who I am as a citizen. And do I need to maybe rethink the way that I view myself as a citizen or as part of a community? So yeah, I guess, you know, my answer, not surprisingly, is I think we can do that. And I think that a lot of fiction writers in our genre, in suspense, are sort of taking that up. I mean, you know, even you look at spousal abuse and problems in marriages and things that are dark and difficult things to deal with. And I think we do have some writers who are managing to sort of address them in ways that are perhaps unexpected. Lee Child in Midnight Line with opioid addiction. Fascinating. And a really sort of different take on that. So yeah, there's my long-winded answer, Alexia.
That's an excellent answer. Yes. Now, you mentioned that you had gone back to Utah to take care of your mother. Mm-hmm. Your family traces its roots back to Utah before it was even a state. You grew up in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as the Mormon Church. And the Latter-day Saints have a world-renowned genealogy database because family history is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the church, family history, and Utah all play a role in your fiction. So how do you respond when someone asks you if your books are based on real life or real people, or, of course, what they're really asking is, am I in there somewhere?
Well, I get the answer is, of course, no, that I haven't. The characters in my books are far more good or far more bad. But then there are a lot of people in between that are probably more realistic. I think where I try to really be accurate is my history, scriptural references, doctrinal references. That stuff is real. Most of the geography stuff is real. If I say it takes an hour and a half to drive from Ogden to Provo, that's probably about right. You know, that sort of stuff, I feel like all of that needs to be accurate. And then beyond that, it's playing with all the rest of it. And yeah, I do think the Mormon Church is a global, powerful, hierarchical organization that makes most of its decisions in private. Now, I don't ascribe any evil intent to the organization at all. But as a mystery writer, that's exactly the kind of organization that lends itself to a lot of fun what ifs, I guess.
Right. You know, you talked about getting some of the details right, like the driving distances and the church doctrine. You have a doctorate in political science and you're an attorney, which are both research-focused fields. How do you balance including enough research and accurate detail to make your novels believable without including so many technical details that only a political scientist or a lawyer would find them interesting?
Oh yes. Well, there you completely hit my Achilles heel. I think certainly for the first book, first for Blessed Be the Wicked, and even for Death in the Covenant, I needed my editor to sort of kind of roll her eyes at me and go, okay, Allison, really? Because I think I would find sort of arcane, obscure little topics. And Alexia, I know you have the same capacity to find obscure, arcane topics fascinating. Yeah. And go really deep. And I do need to be pulled back. So I know in Death in the Covenant, which deals with polygamy, I became obsessed with all of the cases that the church brought to the Supreme Court in the 19th century. And I was reading all this case law and I found it fascinating. And my editor was like, yeah, no. And she was right. The fact is, I think most people will find, you know, a drop of something interesting, and it needs to be accurate. I feel like readers are smart. And now I think a lot of readers, I know I do, sometimes if there's something interesting, I'll immediately sort of Google it. It's like, oh, where is this going from? I think we can rely on that and don't need to let my sort of inner really boring nerd go to town for five pages on, you know, what the meaning of freedom of, you know, religion means in the United States in the 1870s. No one really wants to read that by the pool. So I am learning. I guess the answer is, have you figured it out? No, I think I fail frequently, but luckily I have enough readers who will say, you know, Allison, why don't you pull it back a little bit? And I'm seeing that they're right, that I don't need to go in and write a dissertation on what X in the Book of Mormon, right? Just one little hint is enough.
If it makes you feel better, I've scrapped more than one manuscript with a physician protagonist because it's like a medical textbook instead of a mystery. So it's not just you.
You know what, though, Alexia? I think I'd probably like to read that scrapped manuscript. I'd probably find it fascinating.
Yeah, you and me, but probably no one else.
Yeah, well, okay, maybe not. I don't know. I could do my case law on polygamy in the mid 19th century, and then we have your physician, and or maybe not.
And let's talk a little bit about names. I mean, I will confess that before I started recording, I asked you how to pronounce your last name. And your main character is named Abish. Can you tell us about that name?
Ah, yes, Abish. I love Abish. I love the name Abish. And I knew who she was as soon as I started writing. Her presence was there in a way like I wouldn't have thought really could be, but she didn't have a name. And I knew as soon as I realized she needed a name, that I had to find a good name. Now, because I grew up Mormon, I grew up with so many boys who were named either after characters in the Book of Mormon or after Mormon leaders. Like, it was really common for boys to be named after, you know Brighams, there are Josephs, but there are also many more obscure names from the Book of Mormon. And I didn't know any girls who were named after characters in the Book of Mormon, and there really aren't any female Mormon prophets, so that line is out. So I started flipping through the Book of Mormon searching. I knew there was Sarah, I knew there was a Sariah, and I knew there was Mary, but Sarah and Mary are biblical characters. There are only three other women who were named in the Book of Mormon, and Abish is one of them. And as soon as I saw the name Abish, I'm like, oh my goodness, that is perfect, because it becomes Abby, it becomes Abs. And she's also kind of got an interesting storyline, because she's supposed to be a Lamanite slave who had accepted Jesus Christ, and she helped convert this entire group of non-Christians to Christianity in Central America, as the Book of Mormon story goes. So she is in her own right sort of an interesting character, but I also liked that character being pulled into current day. And given that Abish's father is a professor at BYU of Mormon Church History and Doctrine, it would make sense that he would give her a religious name. That's a really long-winded answer. Again, wow.
No, it's fascinating. It's actually a beautiful name.
It is a good name, isn't it? I know. Maybe some kids, maybe there will be girls named Abish now. Who knows?
Well, there are girls named after Game of Thrones characters, so.
true.
And speaking of names, why did you decide to write under the pen name D.A. Bartley?
Okay, people who've known me for a long time know it's not a very clever pen name. My name before I was married is Donna Allison Bartley. I go by Allison in my day-to-day existence. Basically, on both sides of my family, we have people who went by their middle names and not their first names. I was named after my grandmother, Alice Donna, and she went by Donna rather than Alice. I was Donna Allison, by Allison. So my name that I was baptized into the church was Donna Allison Bartley. I'm a huge fan of P.D. James, so I think I just didn't ever occur to me not to do, like, if we're going to be a mystery writer, it should be two initials, which of course doesn't make sense, Agatha Christie. Like, it's ridiculous, but that was my thinking at the time. So there we go, D.A. Bartley.
It works. It has a very mystery author sound to it, though, so it's a good name.
And it does, you can pronounce it, unlike Von Rosenvinge.
Now, we blog together on the Misdemeanors blog. So how do you, and I'm asking this partly for selfish reasons, how do you come up with ideas for your blog post?
I copy you.
Okay, you weren't supposed to say that. You're supposed to give me your secret.
You know, actually, I think initially when I first started, you guys were all the most supportive, wonderful people. It made the transition from not having published to being a published author so much smoother, because whenever I had questions, you guys were just all wonderful. And so initially I really was sort of stressed about coming up with exactly the right thing. And I think I overthought things. Now I feel like when my week comes up, like I know like a few weeks ahead of time, okay, I've got to start preparing. Sometimes I'm really organized and get everything written ahead of time. Sometimes I'm not. And I find that I'll be responding sometimes to a really great book if I've just read something that's fabulous and there's this, you know, somebody handled, I don't know, dialogue beautifully, or there were, you know, beautiful descriptions, like descriptions of weather, for example, where you're not supposed to work, but, you know, deal with the weather all the time. And let that sort of guide the whole week. And then I also think it's fun. Sometimes I'm guided by all of my fellow misdemeanors. Like I have to thank you, Alexia, because I think you expanded my reading. I was not really a paranormal mystery. Am I really going to read a paranormal mystery? Love them. Love your writing. Love your books. And it was such a nice reminder to go, oh my goodness, I think I know all there is to be about writing. And then you're like, actually, there's a whole world out there that I know nothing about. And it's really fun. And let's go explore.
Oh, thank you very much.
I don't think I answered your question. I tried.
Here's another one, though. Is it harder coming up with ideas for the blog or coming up with ideas for murder?
Ooh, the blog.
I actually need you to, need you to think of ways to kill people.
Yeah, I don't want to ever look through my search engine, like my search history. Like it will not. It's not a good. Not a good thing.
Yes, all mystery and crime fiction authors should be able to have a disclaimer posted on their laptop.
Yes.
Research purposes only. Fictional.
Anaphylactic. Exactly. 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 Completely agree.
And what can you tell us about your upcoming mystery, Death in the Covenant?
This was a fun one. I think it was fun because it wasn't the first. And so I think in the first draft of my first book, I initially was really hesitant to have anybody die. But the second book, I'm like, huh. So it was much easier to sort of let go of people. Now, having said that, there are some people who it pained me. It was, you know, it wasn't pleasant, and it was unfortunate. So Death in the Covenant was sort of triggered by an article that I read several years ago that was about dating communities in really religious sects. So there was a particularly conservative Jewish sect in Brooklyn, and then they also were looking at Mormons in Utah. So you had these religious communities within particular geographic zones. So they were dating communities, and in the case of Utah, and in both religions were very much focused on marriage and family. So this is what made this is why the writer of this particular article sort of was comparing the two. And what struck me was that, you know, as of, I think, 2015, 2016, I'm not sure on the date, but either 2015 or 2016, there for every 100 marriageable age young men in Utah, there were 150 young women, which is quite an imbalance.
Yeah.
And I remember growing up before the internet, where we heard all sorts of stories explaining why polygamy happened. And as I read this article, I'm like, oh my goodness, this sounds a lot like one of the reasons we were given for polygamy. And it just sort of went from there. And it is completely imagination. I will say that this is my own imaginings and a little bit out there, but it was actually a blast to write and to play around with some of the crazy theories there were for polygamy.
Oh. And when is Death in the Covenant available?
August 13th.
Oh, it's coming up soon.
It is coming up soon. Yes. I now I do have hard copies. They just were delivered, I think, a week ago. So the books actually have been printed.
That's very exciting. And where can readers find you in your books?
I say everywhere. I think Indie Books, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and there. I think there. You know, there are all the Kindle versions and all the rest of it. So, I don't think they should be hard to find. I hope they're not hard to find.
And can readers connect with you on social media?
Yes, I have. My website is dabartley.com, and I have a Facebook page. And I am not as good at Twitter as some are, but I try. I'm there, and I also have. I think I've got a link to my sort of my Instagram is Allison Von R. And but if you go to my webpage, everything is laid out as one does these days.
Excellent. Hey, well, thank you very much for joining me in the Cozy Corner, Allison.
Thank you, Alexia. Actually, this was really nice. You're a great interview. This was fun. Thank you.
And my guest today was Allison Von Rosenvinga, who writes the Abish Taylor Mysteries as D.A. Bartley. I'm Alexia Gordon, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries. Thank you all for joining Allison and me in the Cozy Corner. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you.